Some musicians call it the wave trap. And the line trap is part of resonance, parallel resonance circuit installed in the power line at the substation. So if we go to the characteristic of the power resonance circuit, we know that it doesn't allow one frequency to go in. But there is a certain bandwidth of that band pass. So if let's say we want 60 hertz to be able to go through, but we don't want that a communication signal to do not go through or reverse. We want the communication to go through, then we use that trap. It is very nicely done device, about 3 feet in diameter, 2 feet in diameter, and it does have, let me jump. And it does have the other part of the trap, which is the coil made from standard aluminum cable. And then we have a coupling capacitor that is used to receive high frequency communication signal. We don't want them to pass to the power line. What would happen if the signal goes to the power line? It could damage a lot of electronics in the substation. And then we have the tuning device of the trap, which if we have a 50 hertz that we have to tune it at, or 60 hertz that we have to tune it at, we have to do it. So it was a quite difficult job in the past, near past. It wasn't a long time ago, I believe. There are some people who work on it, right? When they had to... what was it? There was signal generated a frequency counter, the BTVM, frequency selective voltmeter, and the resistor in correcting the leads and the transitions, and then the trap that is passive device that is hanging on the towers. You see those high voltage towers, you see those traps. Sometimes you ask your questions, there are three wires, three phases, why do I have two of them? Right. And they had to be removed. So now it is done a different way, that there is a device that is able to tune those traps in minutes. It is actually measuring the impedance. Is it impedance? The signal level. The signal level, right, on it. How do they call it? The impedance magnitude meter. The impedance magnitude meter. Right, let me drop. And this one is able to actually, you have a variable frequency generator connected from the other side. You can actually see the trap. Why am I talking about it? Because in your houses, so many of you have Z-Wave devices. The Z-Wave devices are plugged into the regular outlet and they perform the different functions and could be remotely controlled from another outlet device. And they have a passive and active device, actually the sort of transmitters and receivers. One is transmitting and the other one is responding. So thank you very much about that, and I give it to the colleague who knows more.
I'm not sure what the question is.
Well, that makes two of us here.
I'll tell you whatever you want to know. I just don't know where to start and stop.
Wesley, is there anything specifically you're curious about that our resident expert can let you in on?
No, it was introductory speech, actually. It is a technology that many people are aware of. I didn't have any particular question. I thought that somebody may formulate a question. And to Exia.
I have an idea.
Okay, what's your idea, Ed? By the way, hopefully later on we're going to be discussing the submersible. I realize it's not an airplane, and you usually discuss when airplanes go terribly wrong, but I hope you'll stick around for our discussion about submersibles.
Is sure thing, Roy. Of course, I've given a lot of thought. I've done all the research, and I think I have something to add. But I was going to say it's a terrible shock that I have. But no, my theory is, as long as Wesley brought it up, should I give you just a couple of minutes on my experience with doing that in the real world?
Sure, I would love to hear it, Ed.
This was around 1975, so I assume the technology has improved. But let me tell you, I still remember like it was yesterday. Got a job with Con Edison to work with them on some ideas. The idea was they wanted us to build a network. The northeastern quadrant of Queens was on one network. In Corona, there was a major substation that got 450 kilovolts from the main power pool, and transformers stepped it down to 27 kilovolts, where it's distributed. In Northeast Queens, there were several hundred underground transformer vaults that stepped it down to the standard, 120 to 208. That's a story I'll answer on the web. In any event, so what we did was, before I got on the job, some people did some research. ConEd has, all kinds of places, all kinds of stuff, and they played some games with some of those, transformers, and they found that not only they work really, really well as soon as the cycle heats up, but they also seem to work pretty well transforming approximately 50 kilohertz. So what we did was, we built a monitoring system, a capacitively coupled, about 20 watts at 50 kilohertz, right on to phase B of the, three-phase 120-volt AC output. Why phase B? Because the phases are always A, B, C, but they might be C, B, A. So B is always the one in the middle. That's why we say phase B. But in any event, what we do is we have some sensor circuits. We figured out a modulation scheme, and we put a it wasn't RS-232, but kind of like a single-line data bus, and it was synchronous to the 60-cycle line, which gave you very strong benefits to decoding it at the receiving end. So far, so good?
Yep, I'm following.
And what happened was, it was sending data first, about every 10 minutes, it would transmit for about half a second at a moderate data rate, send the data out. And the reason was, of course, there was no way of controlling it, and the idea was, by having everything intentionally random, that we purposely bought capacitors used in the timing circuit for how long you wait between transmissions, purposely bought them with the loosest tolerance we could find to maximize the randomness. They occasionally talk over each other, so you wait for the next one. But it would send a burst of really low frequency data, but remember it carries 50 kilohertz, how much data you have, And it went through the high voltage 27 kV line down to the main substation. Now, it was done, it was split out into, maybe about 20 different feeders that went different directions. Feeder was fed by this large enclosure with circuit breakers and stuff like that. And they had weirdest name. What they had was the 27 kV three-phase signal come out of the ground and split the individual conductors inside this large enclosed, housing about a 10-foot cube. And this was a reason I've never seen that called a pothead, P-O-T-H-E-A-D. And when we first heard that, we looked at each other, but it's a pothead. All right. But what happens is we have the 27 kV wires. We just put two coils around the middle wire, basically, so that a common field would build on the two coils. They were 180 degrees apart, so a common field would build as it mingles around the wire. Any common mode would cancel. But basically, it was at ground potential, and we bring up the receiver, decode the data, run it into a computer to display the end data. So far, so good?
Yes, very good.
And the system basically works pretty well. Anybody here who knows the area with the LIE crosses over the Cross Island Parkway. There's a section there in Douglaston where they built these, a whole thing of garden apartments, just near a batch of a couple of department stores and supermarkets. And there was one underground transformer, not a transformer wall, but just a tie point in a manhole that seemed to be problematic. So one day, I went out with a Con Edison crew, and they pumped that thing out, because they flooded. They pumped it out, and they put down a ladder, and I went down into this manhole to see if there was anything that stood out. You know, there was absolutely nothing that stood out. Well, they came out, and I said, gee, I have been in a manhole. Any thoughts, Roy?
Well, what did you find? I don't think I received what you found. You said you went in and it was a manhole.
Yes, I didn't make it clear. There was absolutely nothing that stood out. Now, keep in mind, I didn't have any pencil with me besides. You know, this stuff is heavily ground shields. So there was really nothing I could do except look for targets of opportunity. I looked around, I saw nothing out of the ordinary, and gave up.
Okay, I was expecting something a wee bit more eventful.
Transformer comment.
Okay, comment about transformer.
Okay, WB2CQT. I read a story where the United States has purchased about 400 high-voltage transformers from China, and one of our laboratories took one of them apart. These are gigantic transformers for power stations. And they found a thing in there that could remotely kill that transformer, and these were made in China.
Okay, I haven't read that. I'm not incredibly surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the electronics that we build have kill switches as well. I've always been suspicious of my Lenovo computers. I'm always worried that there's someone in Shenzhen or some other place over there is listening to the very important sounds emanating from my house where my Lenovo is parked. I don't know what to make of that.
I do have a comment.
Certainly, Ed.
I am intrigued by the voltage in series, voltage in, voltage out, and wattage in the transformer to get an idea of what's involved. But in general, those kinds of transformers work with banks of circuit breakers. And those circuit breakers are absolutely huge. No way you're sneaking that inside of a transformer. Because basically, a transformer is a core, a big hunk of, you know, laminated steel, copper winding, and they're always oil filled. And they usually use convection currents, that as the oil heats up, it rises, and then there's like a household radiator outside where it comes down and cools off. It would be very hard to see something like that in there, because it was just a healthy fraction of the size of the transformer. It would have to be obvious. It couldn't be embedded into the magnetic.
Maybe we'll all do a search on the internet. That's where I got the story. So I'll just be listening, WB2CQ.
Okay, you always have to be cautious when you go to the internet. The internet, as I've mentioned a few times, is sort of like the bulletin board of your library. Anyone could put anything there. And sometimes they make it really look legit if you don't know what you're looking at. Someone showed me a article that supposedly came from Forbes about an energy-saving device that was just a power factor correction, a pseudo-power factor correction box that was worthless. So, you know, you need to have a good BS meter in all times, but especially when traversing the weirdness that is the Internet. Yes, Wesley?
Yeah, coming back to the subject that I was talking about, it because you were curious why did I bring up the subject on the table. Well, I have the device on my table right now. So, in other words, we have 500,000 volts on the power line. We have those traps, line traps that I was talking about. They are also called wave drive or high frequency stoppers. It separates the two signals, the 60 hertz or 50 hertz, and the signal that is of higher frequency from 40 kilohertz to 1 megahertz that are used for the communication. The interesting thing is that this device has 75 ohm connector and operates on few watts, 2 watts up to 10 watts. So it is made out of two devices. One is just a meter, which is the a frequency level meter, and the other one is just a generator that makes the sweep. So that's practically why I brought it on the table. And the small miniature devices that are based on the same concept are those the G-Wave that were popular in 2000-2010 in every house, probably everybody had it, some security devices made it. Even today, some devices use it, some thermostat, security, safety sensor, motion sensor, lighting, and whatsoever. And if you don't mind, I would like to go to the second part, which is the perspective of the history.
Yeah, Wes, I just want to make sure that everyone is talked out about this because it's going to be a sharp left turn, if you will. And I like to give my two cents about things. Anyway, I have been a big fan of home control devices for many years. Back, I think, in the 70s and 80s, I used the X10 controllers. You could buy them, I think, at Radio Shack. They were all over the place. And they're still being sold. They're basically Chinese manufactured cheap circuits, not terribly good anymore, very sensitive to any kind of interference. They travel on AC, so if you have a noisy air conditioner or refrigerator, lots of luck, but they sell filters. The next iteration was something called Insteon, which I moved on to, that was much more resistant to noise and could operate both through the current line and through RF. They went bankrupt about 3-4 years ago and got bought up by one guy, and it'll be interesting to see if anything comes of it. As you mentioned, Z-Wave was the next big item. Now there's Zigbee, there's Wi-Fi, there's Bluetooth. The latest, greatest home control protocol is called Thread, and the latest one is something called Matter, which promises to kind of bind all of these different protocols together into one big mess that everything can control. The proprietary control circuits that needed individual hubs, and individual hubs sometimes couldn't talk to other individual hubs, so the development of so-called Matter is supposed to bring on a revolution in home control, which I hope it does, because I have a lot of out-of-date Insteons out there that need replacing. Anyway, before we move on to your part B of this, I just want to make sure if anyone has any further comments they'd like to make, please do it now. Yes, Ed.
Back in the 70s, about when the thing was found, came up, And they basically said what we basically did was from the previous wireless system company ever saw. They were telling, and people were alluded to that, wireless intercom that used the power line to carry basically an audio signal on top of them so you could talk from one end of the house to the other. And where I said, I don't know the technology of today, but the present technology that is now. I fell over something that is very interesting. We have simple Wi-Fi, and so many other people do have a Wi-Fi set up. And I have a desktop computer in, you know, the master bedroom. And sometimes I use a laptop in my, recently, my son's room before he moved out, or on Wi-Fi. But when my son visits, he says he'd really rather have a hardwired connection. Because he does some kind of stuff on the computer I have no interest in. And I found out to provide these little plug-in modules that will actually terminate the Category 6 cable for plugging into the computer. And I was skeptical, but he says it works just fine.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of devices that run carriers on the AC line. You got to be cautious. Back in the bad old days of XN, if you tried to run things like that, you could just throw away your XN because the hardware couldn't deal with the other signals that were piggybacking off of the utility line. So they behave a lot better. I haven't really seen anyone selling carrier, AC carrier line, Ethernet adapters. I assume that they're probably good if your speed requirements aren't fantastic. But, you know, nowadays, you can buy consumer electronics that have 2.5 gigabit speed digital streams, where I'm sure you couldn't possibly handle that as a carrier current.
By the way, I was talking about, I bought from Staples, and it wasn't good, $40 for the two ends.
Yeah, I mean, they did what they were supposed to do. Back in those days, I'm guessing on what days it was for you, most Ethernet connections were 100 megabits. And that was perfectly fine. Nowadays, almost everyone has a Category 6 cable or a 6E cable. They're running gigabit speeds, and like I said, switches are having ports that are 2.5 gigs. Sometimes they have a single 10 gigabit Ethernet connection, so I don't think those technologies could have kept up with the, you know, it depends what you're doing with it. If you're just moving email around, then it's wonderful. It's no problem. If you're running high-resolution Netflix in a couple of rooms, that could be a problem.
Oh, VDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Yeah, I think after that broadband over power line brouhaha back there in the, early north, I think everybody has kind of shied away from using power lines for data communications.
Well, what I'm talking about is actually broadband over power lines, but only inside the house.
Oh, yeah, inside the house, yeah, is one thing. But I think with that thing that happened back in the aughts, that was over outside power lines. Yeah, that was a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, you had miles of antenna.
It was a mess. It was a mess here, but it was particularly a mess in Great Britain. They yelled and screamed bloody murder.
And everybody
knew
that this was blood.
Yep, yep. Well, yeah, it's not the greatest idea. I kind of like the present mode that most of our internet is gotten through fiber optics. It has a lot of capacity, and we're not going to run out of it anytime too soon. You know, I mean, you could look up ads for consumer internet service providers where they're offering ridiculous bit streams. I mean, I'm an old fogey who still remembers my 300 baud modem, and now they're just throwing gigabits of internet digital streams at people.
I use 110 baud modems in the day to a teletype.
Well, you know, if you really want to go far back, when I was in college, I had an ASR 430 teletype with a paper tape reader writer, and I actually had software that I wrote that I downloaded to my paper tape, and I had rolls of paper tapes and shoeboxes, so the whole nerd thing.
Been there, done that.
Yep. It was good times. I didn't know the difference, but, you know, I played Space Invaders, all the usual things. It was fun times. It was the best. I got my computer access because I took a course in physics. Unfortunately, chemistry majors, which is what I was, didn't get access to the computer facilities. Biology majors certainly didn't. But physics, the students did. So I took my physics courses and got my access code, which I still remember to this day, for, I think it was an HP 3000 mainframe. Well, we're going down the old histories of what we played with in our youth. Anyone with any other comments before we turn back to Wes? Wes is going to make either a left or a right-hand turn here.
WB2CQ, one more on the transformer.
Okay.
Okay, these things, each one is $3 million. Weighs hundreds of tons. Gigantic. 200 or 300 of them in the United States. One of them was being sent to an electric company in one of our states, and it didn't show up. And when they inquired, where is it, our government sent it to the Sandia laboratories to be examined. And when they were finished, they wouldn't give any reply to the electric company of what they found in their examination. But one thing came out was that it wasn't necessary to send a signal to it through the electric lines. A signal could be sent to it by other means. That's all it said in the article I read. So that's it on that.
Okay. Ed made a good point that these transformers, to break them requires a great deal of electronics. You can't kind of sneak it into something the size of a pack of cigarettes. So not quite sure what the receiver for something like that. You don't want it going off accidentally and giving away the game. To me, the most important is where the source material comes from. You know, if it comes from, say, the Wall Street Journal versus Ed's web blog.
Wait a minute. This is the point, guys.
Okay, tell us the point, Ed.
The point is to turn on or off that much power takes an incredible switch. Let me give you a story. Another Ed anecdote. What I told you about before I did in the 70s. Actually, as the end result of that, I did a new circle. And at the turn of the millennium, I was working again on Con Edison on a similar kind of system, but for the substations controlling overhead lines. But it was not a carrier signal. But I spent a lot of time at substations seeing overhead lines in the less congested parts of the city. So with Con Ed, you know, when you have high-rise buildings and everything, it's all 27 kV underground and underground transformer. When you get out to the areas where there are private houses, it's like Long Island, with, you know, the power lines overhead set by substations. Those substations had 10 megawatt transformers, 27 kV in, 2.5 kV line to ground on each stage going out. and then you have stepped down to the full transformer. You step down to 120, 208, 230, whatever the case is. But they had an interesting voltage regulation. There was a, this data back to the 50s, they had the relays that were voltage sensitive and the like, and they would had a tap changer on the front.
One more comment.
Go ahead.
Okay, you're talking about to disable the transformer, you need a gigantic switch. Of course, the switch would have to be half the size of an apartment building. But what happens if you can tell the transformer to self-destruct, like shut the cooling off, but let the circuits that let the operator know something is wrong, let all those circuits show everything is okay. That transformer will melt down in about a minute.
Okay, boy, I have an answer.
Okay, feel free.
The transformers that I've seen, the flow of the oil, there's no pump. It uses the heat rise of the pore to give you a circular motion. And the radiators have fans to cool them, but they're not always necessarily needed. I mean, only really in hot weather do they really turn on the fans. Let me tell you, you know when those fans are or aren't running, so it's not as simple as solar. But let me finish the story here. But there's very little to do, and also, no, we will not do it. These things have a thermal time constant of hours. I'm not saying a cooling failure that's not noted can't cause tremendous damage, but it's going to take a long time when you have an awful lot of steel and copper and oil to heat up. It's a long thermal time constant. It heats up slowly, even at those too powerful. But remember, those transformers are actually fairly efficient. They're only dissipating like 1-2% of what goes through the machine. Here's the point. The tap changes. Each primary had 32 taps. And it was basically a circuit that would determine whether the heat is the tap or heat is the tap, heat the output where you want it. And the way these things will work is, I'm walking in the yard, like every 10, 15 minutes. Ready to just motor come on. After about 4 seconds, that's boom! That was a change in one tap. I think that tells you something, right?
Yeah. I understand these stories, and like I said, I always think a few dozen times whenever I use Chinese equipment, and of course, we're all hopefully familiar with Hawaii. I think it's the Chinese company that Canada arrested one of their executives and had to let them go. And of course, the entire government of the United States won't touch any kind of communications equipment manufactured from them because they're suspicious as they should be. Yeah, I think there's a reason for the suspicion, but I mean, I think sometimes we assume our enemies are more technologically advanced than they truly are. A lot of what China presents as bleeding edge electronics usually is old stuff stolen from the United States. They've been trying to present artificial intelligence that unfortunately didn't understand Chinese very well because they were just running American AI through a Chinese translation algorithm and such. So, the source of the information probably would be the most important thing to me. And, you know, it probably more effective would be simpler ways of screwing up an enemy's infrastructure. You pay off a couple of crazy hillbillies to shoot transformers that are exposed throughout the United States, and you probably have a much more severe problem. And recently, I think about 6 months ago, there were a couple of weird people who did shoot at transformers that were exposed and gave electrical companies a lot of headaches.
Comments there?
Certainly, yes.
I believe I've also mentioned it. I do target shooting, sometimes with high-power rifles. And I'm pretty familiar with what a high-power rifle can do on various substances. And I think the only thing that they would shoot at that would do any good, remember I said the radiators? In a cast iron, they're actually sheet metal. Could puncture a radiator and spill the cooling oil, you know, the transformer oil. But there's no way even a high power rifle bullet isn't doing damage to the main body of the transformer.
Okay, but I'm sure if you put a couple of nice holes through the coolant chamber, eventually you're going to have wonky problems with that transformer. It may not be a calamity, but it's going to be a major headache, or at least that's what I recall happened recently. I don't even know if they found the guys that did it, but it was someplace down south in Georgia or Alabama or some such.
I agree with you 100%. Absolutely. But what I'm saying is the actual body of the transformer. Let me go from the stand. There's something known as steel plate shooting, where guys set up these little steel plate things, and they shoot at them with high-power rifles, and if you hit it, you hit a clank. And these plates are like half-inch thick, yeah. But that's kind of what you get, you know, with the bullets that go through them, or even dent them, and that's the kind of stuff you're dealing with these transformers.
Okay, I'm glad to hear. I would like to have our infrastructure completely terrorist-proof. It concerned me when I heard reports of the electrical problems they were having down south because of some people having political arguments about silly things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, very good. I don't know what to tell you, John, about the Chinese trying to put in spy transformers in our power supply. Hopefully, all the money we spend on government defense industries will have our back. We'll see what happens. Anyway, we've discussed this a bunch. I've had a good time. I hope everyone else has as well. Let us return back to Wesley. Wesley wants to take a little right-hand turn into historical discussion.
Thank you very much, and to exchange. Thank you very much for pointing at historical discussion. The difference between history and political science is that the history is the study of the past, and the political science is the study of politics, which I'm not going to discuss. Yeah, but in any way, historical facts are the facts, and we may ask a question when the history starts. It starts at every point in time. So it is up to us what we want to discuss, at what point in time we want to take that example. Okay. So we had a situation a few days ago where a United States of America, Europe, and the other countries could be affected if the things went more wrong than it went. That's why we had a number of politicians, American politicians and European politicians, being on high alert. And I was asked a question by Dr. Roy, what really happened? So if I go through the historical points, we have one guy who was a criminal who was in jail for 9 years, and then he was released. He decided to sell the hot dogs on the street, and then eventually he grows up, because he was a criminal guy, to the network of the restaurants where he met Vladimir Putin. He liked him very much, and soon he became the owner of Truth Agency and the owner of Private Army North of Wagner, because the guy who from that group who named it Wagner liked the music of Wagner.
I have a question for you.
Yes, Ed?
Yes, I know you're talking about Ferguson, but I have a question that's completely irrelevant for driving these buses. They say when you're out of jail, you open the hot dog stand, and that's how we solve the problem. My comment is, I assumed it was some Russian equivalent to a hot dog, but the Russian firm, to your knowledge, if you can get an actual hot dog in Russia for love or money.
Well, Wesley, I'll throw that to you, but I mean, up until recently, you could have a McDonald's hamburger. American culture is almost universal, for good or for bad.
No, at the time we're talking about, it wasn't like now.
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, but if I concentrate on hot dogs, then I wouldn't be able to go through the history steps what happened. Because it was, it could end up with quite complication to all of us. So let me continue, and then I'm going to address the question.
Oh, I see. It's like, yeah, sure, or no way. That's all.
Okay, thank you very much. So, then this private army starts to fight in Syria, in Africa, in Lebanon, and plenty of other countries. Especially in Africa, that the group of mercenaries was able to make a big money for themselves and for the Russian government. But anyhow, the guy became big, and then he was sent to fight with Ukrainians at the front. And his name is Prigozhin, Yevgeny Prigozhin. Now that guy was quite obeying the rules of the big czar, and at a certain day, that was a few weeks ago, he started to break down. Or whatever. He started to yell that he doesn't get enough of ammunition. And then he started to yell that when his army, 25,000 people left out of 57,000 of prisoners, all of them are former prisoners. So he was going to the Russian jails and taking those guys and making them the deal with them. You will be with me for 6 months, and after 6 months, you're gonna be forgiven with whatever you did in the past, and you're gonna be a free man. But in reality, most of the army died. Anyhow, there was 25,000 left. Okay, so a few days ago, he said that Russian army start to shoot at his private army when they were changing the position. And then 3 days ago, he said that Russian aviation, military aviation, starts to shoot them. And he started to have a problem with the command center in Rostov-on-Don, which was about 100 kilometers, like 75 miles from the border of Ukraine. 2 days ago, the crisis began when the Prigozhin unleashed a new trade against the Russian military. That was Friday, before taking control of military facilities in the southern Russian city Rostov on the Don and Voronezh. He showed up with his army, and he wanted to arrest
the chief of the army and the chief of the military command, which one was the name Shoigu and the other one was Gerasimov. They were able to flee. There was no fight at all, and he spoke with fewer generals, and eventually he said, I'm going to Moscow. So 25,000 troops of professional killers were directed to Moscow. At the same time, Putin flight to St. Petersburg from Moscow. Oligarchs start to fly all the way out of Russia, and the president of Belarus, Lukashenko, supposedly went to his plane and landed in Istanbul, Turkey. President Putin made the speech calling Prigozhin a traitor and calling the situation the insurrection. And there was no army, because all army is on the front with Ukraine, so it was like if Prigozhin would be able to get to Moscow, he's going to take over the power, and Putin has no place to hide. Eventually, he's going to be a new czar, the criminal, twice from the prison. So our government, plus governments of Europe, decided to do something, and there was a special meeting whatsoever. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just going to concentrate on the historical view of it. At the same time, Russian aviation, which was not much less because everything is in Ukraine, started to shoot at the Prigozhin troop column, and they had Igla. Igla is one of Russian weapons to fight with the airplanes, and they shoot seven helicopters and one special command center big plane, Russian plane that was relaying the communication between Putin and the rest of the army. Till then, there was not supposed to be any casualties, but if we say that three of those helicopters were the transport helicopters, they had at least 10 people on the board plus a pilot. So, we're talking about certain casualties. They didn't care what they shoot at. They were shooting at the civil automobiles and the raffinery gas station, just to make sure that Prigozhin is not going to get the fuel for his army. So it was like we were a few moments from changing power in Russia, and everything could change. So what happened? The main highway was they took a few bulldozers and they made the tranche, I don't know how to say it in English properly, to prevent tanks and the artillery, everything the Prigozhin had to go nearby the Moscow. So when the Prigozhin army was about 135 miles from Moscow, they blow one of the bridges, and we find out that Lukashenko, president of Belarus, who is cooperating with Putin, who actually supposedly was in Istanbul, Turkey, the key fleet, made the deal. The deal was before that, 40 billions of rubles, Russian rubles, including the gold, were arrested in Moscow that belongs to Prigozhin. Prigozhin is a billionaire. But anyhow, he made a deal with him, telling him he's gonna be forgiven. His army of former prisoners of 25,000 people, professional killers, will be forgiven, and he will be given asylum and a place to live in Belarus. At that point, that was yesterday, Prigozhin makes the voice recording saying that they coming back to the dislocation position. So his army was no longer moving towards Moscow. But the army insurrection launched by Evgeny Prigozhin ended as fast as it was like a short-lived armed rebellion. He exposed deep weakness inside the Kremlin and undetermined Russian President Vladimir Putin 23 years rule never before. So the crises were unprecedented in Russia, a recent history, and may forever turn the image of the country's strongman or Putin. The reason I gave you that story was with my poor English, I'm sorry about it. Was that we never know when something may happen. It was supposed to be one of the many private armies, because right now every oligarch in Russia has his private army. It's like they're waiting for the big czar, big king to die or be out of power, and they're gonna fight between themselves for the power. We were a step from possibly nuclear war, because Putin, 1 week ago, transported the nuclear weapon to Belarus, where President Lukashenko is the president. So, although we say that Russians keep control on that nuclear weapons there, if the Putin was to lose the power, then the Lukashenko would become possibly somebody like the North Korea dictator, dictating his own wishes and politics and the future of America and the world. Thank you very much. Take it away.
Okay, very good. By the way, ACPCS, very good, Wesley. As always, I like to add a couple of things. The way that you presented this, it still amazes and confuses me. I mean, why he did it, why he stopped doing it, what he thinks he's going to get away with, what he's really going to get away with. You know, those are all big questions that I have heard all the experts, and it sounds like they don't have a clue either. The point that I want to make to the people listening is that when it comes to Wagner, and they always pronounce it like it starts with a V, the Wagner group is not just a run-of-the-mill mercenary oligarch army in Russia. It is a major generator of funds for Russia and for Prigozhin. What they do is they go down to places like Africa, and they support tyrants and thieves and scoundrels with security forces, and ask for a piece of their natural resources and steal them blind. So, you know, what they couldn't do during the old imperial European age of the 18th and 19th century, they're trying to do today. So Prigozhin and his Wagner troops are making hundreds of billions of dollars in third world countries by basically stealing their resources. And If Barossian Dad didn't do anything differently, July 1st, the Russian Defense Ministry was going to take over his troops, and I think that would be the end of his hundreds of millions of dollars that he got from these other third world countries. So I think that's part of the mix. In addition, this was supposed to be an arrangement where he could keep some aspects of his mercenaries and continue to make money. Although to thrust Putin not to stab you in the back in Belarus, I don't know how he's going to guarantee his life.
My wife insists he's dead already.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if he was. It's difficult to say with these guys. At least the old Putin, I don't know what happened to him. Someone ripped his testicles out or something. But the old one would have killed him before he got anywhere near Belarus. They would just have the limousine disappeared. But who knows? I don't know what's going on with Vladimir these days. He's acting like someone took his bravery. He's a wussing out, and you know the hero of the hour of all people is Lukashenko. Lukashenko is no one's idea of a hero.
Okay. Boy, if you talk to my wife, she's the exact same word she did.
Great minds think alike, Ed.
Yeah, if I was to explain, no, there is no warranty. We just think about Putin Dad, whose decision could change at any time, whose promises could change any time. He is no way to guarantee anything, and if he says something, it's likely gonna change. We had a poisoning of Skripal and his daughter a few years ago in England. We had poisoning with polonium with Litvinenko about 10 years ago, and we had a situation in 2012 with Anna Chapman. Anna Chapman was extremely, enormously, absolutely beautiful woman, very young, extremely powerful. She was walking and everybody was looking. She was like a charm on two legs. She was a spy, Russian spy in the United States. She was in the group of 10 spies that were they had a head, and that head was a double agent.
Anna Chapman was attractive, but not that good.
Okay, and the situation was that one of the scientists of the Mexican scientists was educated in Russia. He met another woman. He had two children with her. Then he moved to Mexico, found another wife, and that he with his wife took hostage, not the hostage. The first wife with two children were taken hostage, and he was pushed to kill the former Russian agent that was in Miami in order to release his first wife with two children. And his second wife was taking participation in it. So they were all arrested. But the reason that I'm giving you the story is so many years passed by, the Anna Chapman story and the exchange of the spies was in 2012, and Putin just recently decided that he's gonna do something about it. So Mr. Prigozhin doesn't have any chances to survive. And so far we don't hear today, second day from Prigozhin. We don't hear anything from the chief of the army, Shoigu, and chief of the command, which is Gerasimov. We don't have the word from it. The reason that he wanted to go to Moscow and he could win, because there is no army there. There is only
some of the internal forces, which would be probably 10,000 of freshmen there, and nobody else. Some police died, and there was the army of 25,000 of mercenaries, professional killers and professional former prisoners. Why did he decide that he's not going to go there? We don't know where he is right now. We don't know. What is the situation? We don't know. And we don't hear from Putin, because Putin actually lost his image. Putin, yesterday, before yesterday,